Hi, this is Lily Benoit.
And this is Louisa.
And today we are joined by two very special guests, Megan and Aiden.
Hello.
Hey!
And today we are going to be talking about David Berkowitz, otherwise known as Son of Sam.
And just some important facts from his early life. He was put up for adoption when he was a week old, and he had a normal childhood. His parents weren't cruel or something.
His adoptive parents. But, like, even with that being said, he was, like, a pretty difficult child. He experienced this one scene that he later noted in some of his interviews as being, like, a pretty pivotal moment for him. It's when he watched a man walk into a woman's restroom, and he noticed, like, obviously the, like, fearful effect that had on the women. And he talked about how that really impacted him and, like, made him understand that the power that men had over women, especially in the day and age where he was growing up. And he also had a couple accidents as a kid that resulted in some pretty severe head injuries, including, like, a car accident, and he got hit in the head with a metal pipe.
Right, so that could have permanently affected
his... Yeah, so it almost makes you go to wonder, like, how much of this is a result of maybe some injuries he's sustained. There's certainly documented cases of people's personalities, like, just changing after they get, like, head injuries like that.
And then when he was growing up, he started over 2,000 fires in the Brooklyn Queens area, which he all talked about in his journal and carefully documented.
And there was also a sexual component to the arsons. He would masturbate after he lit the fires and when the fire people came to put it out. And so later on in his life, obviously his early childhood was, he was a pretty deviant child with all the arson and such. He joined the army, and up until then he hadn't realized that he had been adopted. So when he joined the army, he found out that his mother wasn't his biological mother, which probably has a pretty severe impact on someone realizing that the person that you thought you knew for your whole life, like, as your mother, like, just isn't.
After he joined the army, he was stationed in Korea, where he contracted gonorrhea during his first sexual encounter, which was with a prostitute, which later had an effect on him.
Yeah. And so when he came back to the States, he went and he found his biological mother, and the welcome that he received from them, it wasn't exactly what he wanted. His mother, and she also had a daughter later on. They didn't want anything to do with him. So he, like, felt super betrayed by this, and he couldn't really make sense of it. And, like, because of his time in the army, he became, like, pretty proficient with guns, and some people, like, called him, like, a pretty excellent shot. And he bought a 44 caliber handgun down in Texas, and he, like, in back alleys of New York, he perfected his aim with that caliber of weapon.
Okay, so list of crimes that he's committed over time. There's obviously the petty arson that we've talked about. And then between July of 1976 and 77, he shot and killed about 6 men and women, injured 10, including 2 people who were stabbed. So all these shootings happened at Lover's Lane, and the primary target was the men and the women that were in the wrong place at the wrong time. He approached the cars from the passenger side, where the women would most likely be, and normally one would want to take out the greater threat first, which was the man. And he was very angry about his relationships with women, including his mother, and how they treated him and how they made him feel inadequate.
Yeah, well, I think it's super important that we just acknowledge that the fact that these crimes, these shootings, they weren't targeting the men. He was just targeting the women. Those were the source of his rage. The men were just, like, means, Megan said, wrong place, wrong time.
Means to an end.
Exactly.
Okay, so his MO was pretty calculated, and so he would do blitz attacks on these couples that were sitting in their cars. He didn't really have a specific type of couple that he was targeting. It was just mostly young couples in their late teens and early 20s. And I think probably that was mostly due to the fact that he could overpower them more easily than if he were, you know, akin to a man of his same stature and size. It probably would have been easier to overpower younger people. He primarily targeted the brunette women, so the women were definitely the object in this of his desire. And there was another sexual component in this, like we saw in the arsons. He would masturbate at the scene after he brutally murdered these people.
Yeah. And so I guess, like, getting into maybe more of, like, the nitty-gritty of the crimes is how much fear he had brought to New York during the time when he was active, not just through his crimes, but through the letters that he wrote and he left to the NYPD. They were, like, super nonsensical. They didn't make much coherent sense. They were littered with spelling and grammatical mistakes. And as the crimes progressed and the letters progressed, they became even more nonsensical. His handwriting became more disorganized. He had more spelling mistakes, grammar mistakes. And a lot of people point back to this being evidence of how Berkowitz was devolving as he continued with these crimes. And I actually have an excerpt from one of the letters that he left so that you can really understand just like how bizarre that they were. "Go out and kill," commands Father Sam. "Behind our house, some rest. Mostly young, raped and slaughtered. Their blood drained. Just bones now. Pop Sam keeps me locked in the attic, too. I can't get out, but I look out the attic window and watch the world go by. I feel like an outsider. I am on a different wavelength than everybody else. Programmed to kill." And, like, I'm sure you all can notice there's multiple grammatical errors in that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Not to mention just, like, the fact that it doesn't make much coherent sense. He's just jumping around from fact to fact. And the Sam that he references is his neighbor. And his neighbor had this black lab. And when he was first apprehended, he told everyone, he said, "Look, my neighbor has this dog and is possessed by a 3,000-year-old demon. It's telling me to kill these people."
Also, when you're talking about, like, him being caught, I think one of the reasons, like, that he ended up being caught was kind of his failure to think ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So he was connected to the murders because of the parking ticket that he got, and he was parked close to the fire hydrant, so mm-hmm. that's how they trace it back, because, you know, he was right next to the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. It's, like, another example of his de-evolution. He just gets caught up in killing people. He doesn't think about the simple things, like, I'm parking too close to a fire hydrant. I'll get a ticket. They can connect this back to me.
And then once he was caught, he was immediately diagnosed by the psychiatrist as a paranoid schizophrenic. But then when he was interviewed by an FBI profiler, he admitted that he made the whole story about the dog and being inhabited by a demon. He made it all up.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, it made me think a lot about how much we actually know about these people. Like, how much is what they're saying really true, and how much is just a show that they put on for us to make them seem less guilty. I mean, he did this so he wouldn't get a death penalty, so he could plead insanity.
Yeah. Like, it would make more sense if there was evidence that, like, a lot of these murders trace back to this neighbor and his dog earlier on before he confessed. But since there is a lack of evidence, it kind of does make sense. Like, he is telling the truth when he says he made it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess it just makes you really wonder, like, is Berkowitz just someone who had a horrible past and he let that get the better of him? And another super important thing to talk about is Berkowitz now. Like, he went to prison. He's been in prison for a while. And his time in prison, if you would believe what he said, like, has really changed him.
Yeah. So it first, when he got to prison, obviously you can imagine that back in the time that he first was placed into prison, that there wasn't a lot of separation between general inmates and inmates of a higher caliber. And obviously with him being this prolific and apparent serial killer, it would have kind of behooved the prison guards to separate him from the general population. Obviously they didn't, because back then they just threw everybody in there and just kind of whatever happened. And so he almost died when somebody cut his throat from behind. He needed 56 stitches. And so obviously that is an extremely traumatic event. And you just kind of sit there and wonder if that shaped any way that he made himself reform. So there's this minister who brings religion into prisons. Obviously, it always happens, right? Religion always plays a fact. Roxanne Turillo, and she helped Berkowitz reform. And obviously, there's some speculation on whether or not she really did help him reform, or if he was just conforming to what she said so that he could seem like not a complete and total basket case.
Yeah, so this is a super difficult one for me. The transformation that he made is a complete 180 from who he was. You see people now in prison going around calling him Brother Dave, and it's crazy. I actually have an excerpt from one of Roxanne's, on her website, she had written lengthily about how Berkowitz was one of her most successful, stories. So let me just read this excerpt for you. Today, one of the greatest examples of God's amazing grace in transforming power is seen in the life of David Berkowitz, formerly known as Son of Sam. In the 1970s, David, a former arsonist, Satanist, and murderer, terrorized the streets of New York City. But God, in love and mercy, forgave his sins and gave him a brand new mind, heart, and life. For over 25 years, David Berkowitz has been living a holy and righteous life while zealously serving his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He's truly an example of 2 Corinthians 5:17, which he states, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new."
That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. But it just makes me think, because obviously in prison back then and in prison now, there's a pecking order to the prisoners. But if you are, they're literally calling him Brother Sam. So that just makes me wonder. I mean, we don't know what's going on inside his head, if he's truly reformed or not. But if you're a religious figure in prison, I imagine that's better than, you're kind of at the top of that. So that just makes his time in prisoner probably more bearable and easier, as I would imagine you'd want it to be.
Plus, he was already kind of at the top from the beginning, because if you think about, the social hierarchy of prisons, serial killers and murderers are at the top already.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's super interesting to me, because I genuinely don't know if someone can reform like that. I mean, he has such this, deep hatred for women, ingrained in his childhood. He genuinely thinks that, women have, they've been out to hurt him since the beginning. First with his mother, even his adopted mother, by, not telling him that he was adopted, and then that woman in Korea. And it just...
To be reformed by a woman. Is a little suspicious.
And a brunette woman at that.
Oh, she's brunette?
Yeah, she is.
Well.
So are you saying it's he's lying, or is it pseudoscience? He genuinely believes it, it's just probably not real.
I don't know. I think it's hard for me, because I'm not going to claim that I'm the most knowledgeable in this case. I mean, I don't know who he is, and I don't know who he was. All I have is the facts that are published on the internet and through books. So I'm certainly not the most educated source to say whether or not this is true or not, but I'm certainly skeptical.
Yeah, I feel like religion can do a lot of things, but in terms of reform, I don't know. I just... I just feel like that's... I mean, we can debate about the effects of religion or whatever, but I just feel like that's a lot for religion to accomplish. And I don't really feel like you can ever truly reform him, because he's just the way he is. He's not going to go back to being a normal person.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it is important to note that when he's proclaiming himself now, the son of hope, he's not asking for a shorter sentence. It doesn't appear to be that he's angling to get out of prison. He admits that he deserved what he did, and he feels this immense guilt, and he deserves to stay in prison for the rest of his life. It doesn't appear to be that he's angling for a a shorter sentence.
I think also, too, all of the injuries he sustained throughout his life. And so we have to, in the formation of the brain, right? So you have mm-hmm. the amygdala, which controls rage and fear and aggression and all those negative emotions. And if that that part of the brain was heightened, and the frontal lobe, which is where you make all your decisions, right? If that part was dimmed, then you have to think that his sole motivation is the part of the brain that causes negative things to happen. And so, especially back in the 70s, where mental health, even just plain old physical general health of the brain, wasn't really talked about and wasn't brought up. So I think the environment that he was placed into from such an early age probably had something to do with it too. And I think it's really difficult for like four teenagers to sit here and be like, did religion really change him? Yeah. Like, but I mean, I think if he truly believes it, and I think the part that got me was that he's not angling to get out of prison. Like, so I think for the part of me, if he was like really saying like, oh, I'm reformed, like, can I have a smaller sentence now? Then I might be a little bit more skeptical than if him sitting in there and being like, no, I deserve this, you know, but at least while I'm in here, I can help these other people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think that that's really interesting to talk about too.
Absolutely.
Besides the book he published, do they ever share any information about like what he's been spreading inside the prisons to like other people and how that's affected other people?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I didn't do a ton of research into that. I got mostly sidetracked on all the laws that sprung up based on him publishing his book, how none of the prophets could go to him in prison. Yeah.
Wait, where do the prophets go then? To Roxanne?
I assume it's to the state.
Yeah. Probably.
Which then I hope that they would use that maybe in a way that's connected to his case. So like mental health research or anything like
help
that.
Help the victims or something.
Help the family, the victims' families, anything like that.
Yeah, and I think the mental health side of this plays into this case hugely. And it just makes me think back to when he was a child and he sustained those multiple head injuries. How did that affect what's going on up in his head?
Like Aiden said. Like what part of the brain was hit with that?
And maybe there is a chance that it didn't do anything at all. And it's all coincidence. But
yeah.
I don't know.
And also, like, I was just thinking how his sole purpose towards the end when he was deteriorating or whatever was just killing people. But then I guess you could say he found a new purpose because he's in prison. He can't kill women.
People. Yeah.
So his new purpose is religion.
Yeah,
I guess you could put it that way, which makes, I guess that's just another way of explaining things.
Yeah.
In the logical.
Yeah. And I mean, I personally, I don't want to make any excuses for him. I just want to examine every possible reason for this. I really truly want to understand like what they're thinking. This whole basis of this project is just to like understand why these people are doing this, and it's been so difficult because there's no concrete reason that I can find.
Like, even if you are wrong, they don't tell you the right answer. You just have to like make a decision and go from there.
Yeah, there's just so many layers and deception, and can you even trust that anything that these people are saying? Because we've seen, especially in this case, he makes up a story about a 3,000-year-old demon who's telling him to kill.
Yeah, that caliber of lie.
Yeah,
you have to think about the detail and the thought that went into it.
Yeah, and if you can lie about something that big, then what other little things are you lying about? Maybe even unconsciously.
Yeah.
Yeah, like pathological lying. I mean, I feel like we've all probably encountered a pathological liar in our day.
My brother.
But like, it just makes you think, I mean, what is true, and can you even trust? I mean, is what we know about serial killers based on, you know, like how much of it is, can we actually...
Based on them.
Based on facts.
Yeah.
Reality.
So I feel like that probably just about wraps up our discussion of David Berkowitz. I really appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to to this. And Aiden and Megan, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. Yeah, it's certainly I feel like more beneficial to talk about these things in larger groups where there's more ideas to bounce around.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to Born or Made. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.